Sometimes actually the best ideas really come when you're slightly removed. And if you're always in the analysis paralysis, you're actually not taking that step back into like, does this make as a whole sense?
I always ask myself the question, does it move the needle?
You got to be fast. You got to be organized. You got to have your data together.
What would be the first resources you would hire from a technical perspective a little bit and also from a personality?
As a startup, you're somewhere between default alive and risking insolvency. At some point, you need to flip the switch. Once you find product market fit, the numbers run differently. Scaling a startup is about controlling inputs and outputs, and currently it's changing. We know software startups as high margin, no extra cost to serve customers, and therefore ultimately scalable. But now, with the rise of AI, token usage, agents, and more, there is a cost to every new customer, and it needs to be controlled. On LinkedIn, I saw the founder of GetSwan compared to a restaurant business, because as a founder, you need to find the perfect mix of serving the best food at the best prices to make money as a business. Today's episode is called Scaling Finance because it is the crucial skill that differentiates a good company from a great company. That's why SAP for Startups and we from Unicorn Bakery brought on two exceptional finance experts who can help you understand what scaling finance is about. Fabienne Dürig is the former COO and CFO of Starmind, former SVP operations of WeFox, sits on the board of Make.com and is consulting many more scale-up businesses on finance. Remo Gerbig is the CFO of SkyCell. SkyCell is changing the face of global pharmaceutical supply chains through a combination of hybrid containers, tracking software, and risk management service. One of Remo's key responsibilities was SkyCell's $160 million Series D, which brings total funding to $212 million. With these two experts, we are now diving deeper into the modern role of CFOs, forecasting and KPI alignment, fundraising, and people. We know you're going to enjoy this episode of the Unicorn Bakery.
So Fabian, two Swiss people in the middle of Switzerland, in Zug actually to be precise, in English, doing a podcast about finance. What led you here?
I guess the second thing that we have in common, or that I know we have in common, which is we are both working in finance.
That's true.
So today, I'm looking forward to discuss with you how you see the role as a CFO and maybe give one or two tips of what you've been through in your career within fast-growing environments. Maybe before we start, tell me a little bit about your career and what you did in the past and what led you to this position here at the SkyCell.
Yeah, no, very happy to. And I think we both agreed for the people watching this, we are just going to share experiences. I think none of it is per se the truth, and there's always different interpretations, I think, with everything. And I would say that's also my experience throughout my career. And I don't think I have a sort of classic CFO profile, if you want. I'm actually, funny enough, I'm a physicist by background. So I studied here in Switzerland and then did a PhD in England, in Oxford, more like in life sciences, actually physics and life sciences, and ended up at McKinsey doing strategy. Right? So it's kind of the very classic type of career move. But it was always driven by being interested in lots of different fields. And then especially, I think, a business is just as interesting as science, right? And there's so many different permutations of the same thing. But I would also say throughout my business career, I looked at various different roles. I started off actually, obviously, in strategy, looking at FIG, right, financial institutions, but also one of the most fun things was a chocolate factory in England to optimize the operations of that. And I've always liked that interplay between strategy and operations. And I think that's maybe the red thread throughout the career to say, like, you know, on the one hand, we have strategy, we have numbers, but then how do we actually get things in motion that ultimately move the needle and change around the business performance? And so from there, I continued. And after McKinsey, I went into the fastest growing and maybe afterwards not so fast growing Groupon, which was fascinating to watch. Right? We had like thousands of people around the world. We grew into hundreds of millions, actually billions, at like a 13 billion IPO, which was fascinating. It was a total zoo. And probably also one of the very first experiences of, like, if you don't have systems in place,
And then, you know, not many companies have the chance to grow into billions of transactions and cash flows in the period of like 4 or 5 years. But I think that was also one of the challenges that was very early on clear. If that doesn't link together with the finance systems, you end up also running into trouble, and eventually you're getting more and more sand in the wheels, and it also leads to ultimately an underperformance, as we've seen with this particular company. Then once you actually want to go into a listing, and then things do come up, and things getting harder and harder to stay under control. So, but it was a fascinating journey. Since then, done lots of different other things. Ran a taxi company competing against Uber in London. Get still around. Super fascinating. The ultimately the ride hailing on demand on market. And maybe the most funny thing was flying taxis, flying vertical takeoff and landing aircraft in Germany with Lilium, which was a totally different challenge, right? So all of these had very different challenges. One, of course, with the electric aircraft was how to actually finance probably a billion plus capital expenditure before you even see a first passenger flying in this machine, and obviously certification and so on. So there I ran different roles from the finance side. Like, you know, we were 10 people when I joined, and there were like 1,000 people when I left, and we had the IPO and on the Nasdaq. Fascinating journey, seeing all of these different stages. And then now, of course, to SkySell, right? And this is where we are today. Yeah. Very different company, and we can share a bit more in a second. But here we do medicine transports, so we actually produce hardware for medicines that travel around the world. I can share a bit more on that, but also we couple that with global visibility, right? So it's actually tracking the goods around the world, and then providing the software systems for our pharma clients to monitor and to intervene as well when something happens in Delhi or wherever their precious goods are, that actually they know how to do things. Totally different challenges, and here, but always linked to probably financing companies, getting the strategic direction for future growth together. So that's me, kind of in a very quick nutshell, maybe. What about you? I understand you're also having a very varied journey to where we are today.
Yeah, yes, I do. I think we have one thing in common. I believe probably we are both curious. So I was always curious. I've also seen different business models, different challenges. And I believe in challenges, you learn the most. I actually studied hotel management, and there I learned that the client is the most important part of your business, so to say. And I would say that has actually been part of me since the very beginning. And that's maybe a little bit unusual in finance, who is often considered a backward-looking function. But then I did started my career out in a Big Four, advising financial institutions on risk management, and also did the CPA. So was a bit more on the classical road. I would say always on the search of being more in the business. So that's when I then also changed. I went into the business, started in corporates, where I did M&A transactions, also as a freelancer, and then kind of stumbled into the startup and scale-up industry because I thought it's interesting. Here I can really drive and things forward, and also see a little bit the topics that are outside finance. At that point in time, I was doing a lot of sales-related topics, like building a sales operations organization, or also getting involved in HR, doing all the mistakes in scaling with people, and also found it that it was a bit difficult to be perceived as the CFO and responsible for people. So that's definitely something that I wouldn't really get into that much as I was at that point in time. And then I also was in a scale-up where we grew from about 200 and something FTEs to 1400, and then back to 1000 via M&A, but also via organic growth. We went through some challenging phases as well. Today, I'm definitely grateful for it. I learned a lot also in how you actually tackle challenges, not only in being responsible for bringing the costs down, for example, which is not always a funny topic because it always impacts people, and also in bringing together different business models under one roof. How do you actually ensure that you deliver what has been promised in the investor story, and how do you adapt when the market environment changes? Today I work with several, not only one, companies and help them to automate their finance functions, because I believe, you said it, systems are key, but there's a lot to come with all the new developments. You don't need to change everything from the inside out. There is so much opportunity that you can realize with add-ons to systems or processes. That's what I do today. So I'm looking forward to having this discussion. I think it will be focused a little bit on growth, because that's the environment that we're both in. And how do you also generate efficiencies, but never lose sight of what the CFO also is? It's basically the gatekeeper, so you can't just...
So I'm curious, do you think, having seen from what you're saying so many different aspects of the business, does it help you now in your function and when actually growing a company, that you've seen from the sales side to the HR side, that you've seen the various different functions? Do you think it is essential as well for the role of the CFO?
I wouldn't say essential, because I believe many paths can lead to a certain function, also the CFO role. But I would say it has definitely helped me from understanding. I mean, in the end, the financials are always a result of something. And which levers do you have to turn to actually improve the result or to get to the financials that you need to achieve the strategy? So I think for that, it has definitely been helpful. And you're also a change maker in a fast scaling environment. You have to make sure that you move at a certain pace. And it's easier for me, at least, when I understand what does a marketing function do, or what are the challenges of a people function, or is it really their core priority to actually implement an ERP? Or once the people function implemented the new systems, but no one really thought about the data transformation, the data transfer to the new system, then you know, what are the different roles and what are the mindsets and how do different roles look at certain aspects of the business? I would say it's helpful, but it's not a necessity.
And how do you see the role of how would you describe the role of the CFO, right? I think there's lots of different permutations, as you say, right? So there, or maybe how would you describe your own role as CFO? Well, what type of flavor do you bring to the table?
I believe the CFO role is currently changing, driven by the automation and all the AI, what they will bring in the future. There's a lot of fuss and hype about what it actually is able to do right now, but I believe that's more the future. Personally, I see the CFO as a strategic business partner. In my opinion, everything which is what I call finance operations, the daily business, just has to run. So it doesn't move the needle in general for the business, but it has to be accurate.
Unless it doesn't work, right?
Exactly. It has to be accurate and complete. So I see it more towards the strategic business partner, because personally I've seen what you can actually influence. I'm sure you have this experience as well. Where would you say that you have influenced the business outcome the most in the recent maybe months? Or can you name an example?
Years. Maybe slightly answering this different. I think it's interesting because it actually changes it also very much with the stage of the company, right?
And yes, and, I agree
and,
to that.
And I think that, you can be right in some of the most critical times when it's a do or die type of moment. How do you actually finance the next 10 million and kind of like be that from existing investors in late night negotiations or a convert or some venture debt or very, very different when you're actually in a much larger organization when you already have a rolling business and it's potentially much more about making sure the cash flows ultimately add up and the swings of receivables and payables and don't get you out of into a very nasty situation, right? As we've seen, right? My mother always said I should have taken a proper job, right, and worked for like Credit Suisse, right? But you see sort of like it can, these kind of like challenges are in extremely large businesses as well as in the startup environment. And I think that is what makes it so exciting, right? So when you're coming in as a CFO or any sort of C-level in a very early stage startup, you typically work very closely with the founders on some of the very basic stuff. At the same time, you're building the plane, and then of course, as the stages grow into more the scale ups into the sort of the hundreds of millions type of funding and starting to see the, then I think automation starts to be probably much more of a like building actually the rails that you can also do not just 10 million or 50 million, but actually potentially 500 million in revenue. And that's two very different categories, right? I think the smaller is still manageable with very small teams and potentially also just, you know, getting the job done, right? And the latter starts to be like without the automation, you are going to lose track of some very, very key things. And then if you don't have that monitoring element, you might end up totally in the wrong place, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think I'm not sure you've seen that or you feel like that as well.
No, I agree. I think more of the same. So the scaling is different than to early stage. I believe you can grow from one phase to the other, but it's you need to adapt, and you need to make sure that you have the right partners or coaches or mentors that help you also in the areas that you maybe have never done. It's different to implement to outsource accounting because you have now two accountants instead of one when you're in the first phase of growth, than to actually implement a fully fledged SAP. I believe you're doing that right now. So how is it going?
Nope. Look, I think good. I think we're in an interesting phase, right? Because company has taken quite a long time ago, like about 10 years ago, the quite a strategic decision to build its own ERP system for our core business, right? So our core business ultimately is we have thousands of containers that are flying around the world, not transported by us, but we are global, truly global, right? With 50 stations around the world, we are operating in pretty much any country because, of course, they go anywhere, right? So we had the very specific problem for which we couldn't even find an ERP system to necessarily mirror exactly those business processes. And so the decision at the time was very much to say, look, let's go with a very simple finance ERP, but actually have our core operational ERP done ourselves for those specific processes. And so our first journey now is, and that's why I think I'm maybe slightly less nervous than what you expect my answer to be, is because now we're first of all transforming and actually moving on to the financial reporting part from the previous version that we have into SAP, and the whole core of the operational working of the company actually remains independent, right? So the very worst thing is I can have is like and you know my team is working day and night, right, to avoid that, but we might have some challenges in the statements to come, and we'll have to do some explaining. But I think the core operations is not going to be touched by, so we're not going to run out of milk on the shelves from the transition. And I think that's maybe kind of lucky, but it also comes with its own challenges, right? Because of course you're having a multi-systems landscape, but everybody does, right? So I think
I think there are pros and cons to everything. I think the responsibility of us here in back office functions is to support the business and not to try to implement the best or the most sophisticated with any features SAP. And for that, I believe from own experience also of large ERP implementations, the key is the design phase. What do you actually want to achieve with that system? And that's also what I heard from you. You made a conscious decision. This is what's in the SAP or in the finance system, and the rest is outside. And I believe that's truly core, and that is actually the case for all the systems that you have. I believe as a CFO, you have to get into the weeds. Is maybe the wrong word, but you have to get around the IT. What is actually supporting what, and where is which data sitting? I think I see a lot that in, especially in brownfield, which we call companies that are fastly growing but already have existing systems, for example, roll-ups or buy and build stories, I see a lot that it's not clear what is where is the customer information stored, what is actually financial information, what is operational information, and how do you bring it together. And I think that's a little bit, has become a little bit my core out of own.
Yeah, you told me. I get the sense you're a bit of a crack on in that.
Yeah, I'm not sure,
I mean, what would you recommend the audience, right? So everybody, obviously, this is a tricky challenge, right? Because everybody has a different starting point from where they go, right? But if you had to give any sort of guidance towards looking into the future, what would be your advice?
I think in the future, if we want to look out into the future, I think everything in the back office, or mostly everything, is going to be automated because it's not core. Today, there's a lot of money, in my view, sometimes also wasted on non-core functions. And there, today, we have different possibilities to have that a multi-system IT landscape is not such a challenge anymore as it was maybe a few years back. But my advice is to actually take a step back and really look at your IT landscape, also together with the CTO, if you have one, or maybe with someone external, and to really define what is the core data that you need to run the business and where is it stored and what systems do we have, and is it a system that is mainly for data storage, or is it supporting core processes, or is it in the back office? I see a lot that this is not really defined. And then the different functions, finance, IT, marketing, HR, whatsoever, they, of course, they want to achieve their job. And then they optimize for themselves, and maybe finance optimizes for themselves. And when everyone optimizes for themselves, but no one really has the overarching overview, how does it help us to achieve our numbers? Then I think it becomes difficult. Mm. And it's harder to correct in hindsight than to do it correct from the beginning. But that's actually the case with everything.
So it's about also setting the right KPIs from the beginning.
I would say so, yes. I think that's one of the major roles of the CFO, basically to take the strategy and transfer it into numbers, and then also making sure how it's measured and that people are incentivized in the right way. And what comes to my mind here is also, how do you bring people together? I guess we all have been in board meetings where the sales boss presents numbers that you as a CFO are like, or I was at some point in time, sweating blood, saying, thinking, oh, these are not really the numbers that I have. Why could that be the case? And how do you see that? How important is it that your operational numbers from the core systems, let's say Salesforce, are really aligned with the financials? Or what's your perspective on this
interesting question.
To avoid that the stakeholders get different numbers from different people?
Look, I think interesting question, and I'll answer in two different parts, right? Because I think on the one hand, there's what do you see operationally, and then what is ultimately translating into the hard revenue numbers? But I think there's another topic we should talk about, is about forecasting. I can see you smile, right? And I think that also where things really... Look, I think on the operational data versus I think what I always find somewhat challenging is when people are simply using any discrepancy as a sort of an excuse not to engage on potentially that there is a challenge, right? Because very often, especially when you look from a sort of a finance lens, right, there's a set of numbers. That number probably inherently must make sense, right? And it shows a certain trajectory or certain insight that maybe there's a sort of a challenge there, right? But be that on margin side, be that on volume side. And I always find that not particularly fruitful to just say, look, the numbers are wrong and therefore we can't engage even on the dialogue, that there's potentially a challenge, right? By saying, like, well, operationally I see a slightly different number, right? So I think this is number one, right?
So you're saying the topic switches from the business performance to data quality.
Yeah, so yeah. I think that's mm-hmm. one, right? And I think mm-hmm. You shouldn't just use data quality as a sort of an excuse not to actually think about, like, what are the levers, what are actually the drivers of the business performance that we all agree, right? If we grow fantastically and phenomenally, everybody's going to be happy and we all want to clap and so on, right? So this is one, right? And I think two, I think I can live with a certain level of ambiguity, right? Especially when you're in a high growth environment with systems that are actually still changing. Evolving and changing and so on. And as long as it kind of like, because it's kind of like, the difference between it dropped by 5% or by 5.5%, it depends on how big the number is, right? But in a way, it's like it still dropped, right? And it's going in the wrong direction versus like, and as long as not one number says like it grew by 20% and the other number says it dropped by 5%, that's an interesting one as well, right? Because there might be actually somebody just looking at volume and ignoring margin, right? Or actually focusing on, like, some people, it's always funny when people just look at like the number of let's say social media followers, right? That there's a kind of like, yeah, that's great, but that actually doesn't translate into actually dollars and so on. But it's a leading indicator as well, right? So I think we shouldn't ignore leading indicators, but I can live with a certain ambiguity between these various different inputs as long as we don't then end up in a sort of a senseless discussion of like, well, we can't even discuss potentially what the financial numbers are saying to identify trends and kind of like look at like where should we take corrective actions, right? Because it then actually leads to my question to you about forecasting, right? Because because we typically do the all have the same challenge, right? We use historical data to derive forecasts, and it's just an inherently difficult and error prone and never going to be accurate type of process, right? And so that's I'm curious to get, I think you're in more in a sort of a PE environment, right? So there's different environments, right? So mm-hmm. you probably have the public company environment, you probably have a PE environment, you have a high growth environment, all demand different growth curves and different kind of like accuracy to forecast, right? How are you thinking about that?
I agree with what you said before. I think you need to agree on what is the deviation that you can live with. How accurate do you want to be? And I believe it's different if you're in a distressed situation or if it's things are really going well and all you push for is more growth at the same margin, or if you want to increase the margins, then you have to go a bit more into the details.
And it's different things you look at in those different situations as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
In the distressed one, it's just cash at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
Or not just
cash. In the
cash
end of the day, you need to earn something you need to earn capital to allocate it and to drive innovation or to drive progress. Whether it's financial progress or other progress, could also be that you invest everything in order to be the leader in a certain category, for example.
And this is, by the way, very, very hard to translate that into financial numbers, right? So let's say you're investing tens of millions of dollars into a new product, right? And then the progress of that product development until market launch, et cetera, right? This is actually something that might be asked company. I mean, I've seen it with aviation, right? I mean, until you actually have an airplane that is certified, you have zero, right? And then
Or in the M&A environment.
In the M&A, yeah.
It's super difficult to time deals. I personally see it a little bit from two perspectives. One is the running business, that I think if you understand the business and if you have a little bit of history and you're not in the super high growth environment, you can forecast it as the best you can at a certain point in time. And there, I think the KPI tree is super important. What are your indicators or what are your levers that you have to influence in order to achieve the top line or the margin that someone at the top has maybe set? And is it even realistic? And then the other part is the inorganic growth or everything which is not so easily plannable because it could be changing at any moment in time. And I think, yeah, we have to be realistic. It's never fully true. Mm. It's the best you can do at a certain point in time. And I think maybe it has to do something with age. I'm not sure. But sometimes I believe, the more often you do it, it's not about all the effort that you put in. I think sometimes analysis can be paralysis, and that then translates also into the forecast, because you have so many different scenarios and you don't really know which one to pick. And the more you analyse, the more uncertain you get. Sometimes now I think it's better to actually say, okay, this is the baseline, which we know, and that we don't know. And if it fluctuates by X percent, what do we need to do?
Yeah.
Or what does it mean for our cash? And I think that's maybe, that is a better way to look at than to try to forecast it as accurately as possible, because I've never seen it done. And I think another challenge in the forecasting is, what do you do top down, which I include the CFO, and what do you do bottom up? Mm-hmm. And I would be keen to
tell me more. No, you brought it up. This is an interesting point. And for those who don't get it, right, this is like, how much is actually top-down target setting versus bottom-up, sort of like potentially sandbagging / creating some achievable targets versus more stretch targets.
Optimizing for incentives.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe that you definitely need to bring people on board. And you can do that in many different ways. Either they can do the bottom-up forecast on their own, but that means you get something and it may not fit at all to what your idea is from top-down or what you need to achieve. And then there's a lot of convincing and change management to do. So, or you do it top-down and then they may manipulate the bottom-up numbers to actually achieve the top-down given target. So I believe it's probably somewhere in the middle. Mm. And for me, forecasting goes together with business analytics, because I think the better you are in your in understanding your business and in the analyzing how many leads you have to generate for X, Y amount of cash or margin, if you know that, it's easier to forecast, of course. So I'm for that departments get their own analytics, maybe not team, but at least approach that they can find their own way in how they actually figure out how many leads they need. But I believe you have to give the KPIs and you have to give the guidance from top down, and not because you want to force them into something, but because you need to foster alignment. And I think that's one of the major roles.
Yeah.
As a CFO, I'm not sure how you do it. Do you have teams that do the analytics in
your
businesses? Or are you controlling everything from your Eiffel Tower? Or
yeah, I do have an Eiffel Tower. I love my Eiffel Tower. And I think that's very important, right? That it's ownership as well. Right. So, I think in part that's a tricky part, right? Because ultimately the function also is very much the linchpin to the outside world, be that existing investors, which are semi outside, but also future investors or the street in for like the public. That's a tough job, right? for the public CFOs. And I think they're ultimately also like, as I think we were probably in similar stages, right? When you're still raising capital, right? You're obviously also making certain long-term predictions, right? And I think that needs to ultimately translate into a strategy, right? Because I think it's actually pointless to write down that you're going to grow 10x if you don't actually have, like, and people do that, right? I mean, I've seen that many times, right? So mm-hmm. like insane predictions into the future without actually having a clear sort of like product strategy that makes it not just dependent on one variable, but actually multiple variables, right? Because it's simply impossible to say whether it is right or wrong, right? But the point is, can you achieve a 10 or a 5 or 10 or a 15x versus just staying stagnant and actually not growing very much, right? So I think this is, so you kind of like, but you need to start somewhere as well, right? Mm. And I think that's...
And you better this plan from the functions or from whoever, from the people that are responsible, the less control you feel you need to have.
True. And then it's about capital allocation as well, right? So then you need to actually think about like where do you actually place the bets, right? But they're bets, right? So at the end of the day, because that's the inherent issue with business, right? You just don't know for certain that an outcome is a certain outcome. So, and I think that's when it gets very interesting. And translating that into, and you know, typically you don't have the whole team involved
in the sort of the preparation to investors, right? And that is a very much a top-down exercise very often, right? Based on, of course, deep knowledge of the system, right? That's where our founders very often are, of course, critical, right? In actually setting that vision and actually believing, like, kind of translating. That's where the strategy piece comes in as well, right? Translating that into actually executable work streams that you can then go off and do, and then obviously then it's about execution and delivery in order to do that. But that's a very different situation, and it's also very different when you grow from 100,000 to a million, right? Or growing from a million to 100 million is totally different. Two totally different kind of like scale from 10 million to 100 million, right? It's like very, very different things, right? One you can sort of almost like fudge, right? Through manpower, growing from 10 million to 100 million, that's then a very, very different. For that, you need to have a product, right? You need to be productized, and that needs to sort of like start to develop a life of its own. But yeah, so this is where I think that sort of like that top-down strategy setting at the bottom-up team and actually then translate that, getting people engaged on this journey, starts to become very, very difficult, right? Because yes, these very often are crazy targets, and people have to sort of like understand why what makes this possible.
I think there's one thing in common which you have in all the different growth stages, which I think is not really associated to the CFO role, or the role doesn't get enough credit. It is about also creating alignment. And I think that it's a people factor because you, yes, you can say this is how we achieve our target, but if it's not backed up by a plan and behind the plan, there are always people. So I believe that's something which I don't think the role gets enough credit for. And that's also a super crucial capability that you need to bring in stakeholders. And you have a lot of experience in financing in different stages of growth. What would you say is key in A, to get it over the line, and B, could you elaborate a little bit which option, like, are you gonna raise additional shares, or are you gonna have credits? And at what point in time do you get to think about those different options, and what has been your experience in that area so far?
Yeah, interesting point is, first of all, getting it over the line, right? There's so many companies, right, that actually have great financing discussions, right? But the difference between having discussions, like, I think one thing is, like, especially in the VC environment, their job is to speak to as many companies as possible to pick the winners and to see which ones are the strongest opportunities. And I think that's maybe one piece of advice is, like, you cannot, until you actually have term sheets, but not even term sheets, until you actually have the money in the bank, it's just not done. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that is my number one mantra, is that actually it's done when it's done, right? Type of mentality. And that means you really need to stay on top of this process. Even when you have a term sheet, right? You should work on potentially still on term sheet number 2 and 3 and 4, because if term sheet number 1 realizes they're the only term sheet, actually the deal might all of a sudden change in the last minute. All of these things happen all the time, right? Or the deal might even fail because all of a sudden markets start sputtering again. And that's kind of all happen in a matter of weeks, right? And something else happens in a fund, and then all of a sudden they pull back, and then, yeah. And of course, right, some of the best funds to say, we never renegade on a term sheet, right? But there's lots of different ways, even if you say, like, you never do that by kind of like making the process or the DD or whatever stretched out and make the thing go away on its own, right? So I think this is number one. So you need to stay on top of that process. And that means you got to be fast, you got to be organized, you got to have your data together, you have to actually be able to respond to the questions, but not over respond and manage that, and then ultimately drive it to a close, right? And the best thing you could do is actually not just have one fire in the iron, but one iron in the fire, but multiples to make sure, right, that you somewhat have a diversified process. And then the types of capital really depends on the type of situation that you're in, right? Whether you're seed or a Series A or a growth company. There's so many different options, and that potentially doesn't make it easier, right?
Or founder preferences.
Or founder preference, and then you have to think about the dilution and so on. But look, I think that some of the best founders I found is that they actually are not worried about dilution, right? They're worried about actually the bigger company outcome. Yeah. And of course it is important, right? But I think it's always a bit, and of course it matters to them personally, right? The dilution and all of these things, and to a certain degree also all the voting and so on. But if that is your number one first priority, then everything else gets actually very, very difficult to achieve. And funds realize that as well. And it can actually make things complicated, right? But so I think you're better off actually driving, especially like for a good deal, right? And then doing the things to get the maximum valuation, and then be potentially optimizing how much capital you take at which stage. But also generally my experience is actually you're better off taking a little bit more capital than potentially what you think you need, because it always gives you that extra buffer, right? If you're in the scale up, right, if you're still in that stage where you have a runway, you're actually better off if you have that extra 6 months, which typically a process takes you, than just only have whatever 18 or 24 months, right? Better to, because unfortunately also one of the things I've seen is always getting a little bit more expensive than what you think initially in your plan. It really is, right? Because you start then having some capital, and then you actually start bringing on some people, and then the world isn't maybe as simple as one thinks in the early stages, right? And then you need bigger. Like you also have certain
things take longer.
Yeah, and certain inefficiencies that start to creep in, and then you should work very hard on not having those. Yeah, and then you have a whole menu, right? From just pure primary equity to ultimately converts to also debt, like these days, especially when you're getting a bit more advanced, right? So there's a bunch of different ways to also have debt funding for a certain period, but you have to have a plan, right? You have to have a very clear picture on like how you're ultimately becoming cash flow positive and how you're actually ultimately managing all of that with debt, right? In particular, you got to think these things through. And then, of course, on the equity, you need to also be smart about how do you think about valuation steps, right? If that all of these, lots of different permutations, but I think you need to get the job done. That's because otherwise you can agonize and analysis paralysis on fundraising is probably the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, and you need to stay in control, which is not always as easy, because all the investors have different viewpoints on your business. Yeah. Are you adjusting the business plan or not? So I believe, you need to go out with a goal and stand firm on it, except there is an argument of changing, which actually has a foundation. So on day one, you collected the money, everyone is happy, everyone, you know, already started looking for new resources, so everyone starts hiring. How do you deal with that phase, you know, when the money is in the bank and everyone comes to the CFO, hey, yeah, we budgeted 3 additional people, but I need actually 6 or 5 or 4.
I think then you're already lost, right? If this is your day one, then kind of something fun. You should have planned in a way that actually day one nothing happens, right? And then actually, because...
But things change. Maybe it took a year or 6 months.
I know, right? And then maybe it's sort of like on day one, maybe you're like slightly more relieved that you're not going to have to do the really hard and ugly stuff next month. That it depends how close you are to the wire, right?
Yeah.
But I think my general mantra would be like, you should have been planning anyways, that nothing... Like day one, whether it's last month or this month or next month, nothing there. And then I think you only know how much you managed to raise, right? So this is, it's a luxury if you raised all the money that you wanted to raise. Not everybody achieves that, right? So then I think you also need to think as you're going through that process, then I think it's time to really work with the team and kind of like look at like how do you most effectively allocate the capital, right? It's a bit trickier when you're having very long-term investments, right? So and then there, you always need to sort of strike that balance, right? Between maybe there are certain investments you can do very early on that de-risk afterwards the timeline later on when the more expensive parts need to be delivered. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, I think on day one when the money is really in the bank, right? That's when nothing per se changes, right? But then you're starting to get into the next stage of that execution, and I think that should be still always like a revisiting of the plan, that it still makes sense what we said we were going to do, because maybe 6 months have passed, things have changed, but people shouldn't be having the job offers for you to sign on day one, right? I think I find that
I have a question for you, which we didn't pre-discuss. But I believe
we didn't pre-discuss any of this. So.
Yeah, but we didn't touch upon it at all. But I believe in as a CFO in a fast-changing environment, you need to like change, because you described it very well before. You know, you need to adapt. Mm. Things change. The money doesn't come in on time. And then the plan changed or the market changed. You are constantly in this adaption mode, so to say, which can be very tiring. And then you have the resilience that you need. Maybe sometimes also you can close things on time or you can predict so well. How do you deal with that personally? You know, what would you say? Would you say this is a kind of a condition that you need to like change, or that you need to be more resilient than in other environments where you more go from quarter to quarter?
I think if you are in the startup environment, pretty much most of the roles, and I would also say like that's pretty much from very like entry level roles to senior roles in the startup environment. I think you need to bring a willingness and a kind of like to engage on the process. And the process is not going to be linear. The process isn't going to be. I think corporate used to be maybe a little bit more like that, but I also believe that corporate these days just moves from one restructure to the other. And I think this is, unfortunately for most people in the work environment, actually nothing unusual, right? That we all need to deal with change pretty much all the time. And so therefore, I would say this isn't per se whether you work in a high growth environment or whether you are in a big bank and things happen, or in pharma. And they I think that there you need to probably still look at like what gives you sort of like the inner gratitude and strengths to say, look, you're still you, right? And so you need to have sort of that, like people always like to talk about balance, right? But I think you do need to find just sort of these islands that are your islands, right? And for some people, that's their family. For others, it's their exercise. For other people, it's their sort of like whatever that is, right? And I think there's, I've seen some people get really burnt when they've given up everything, right? When they have not actually found, have sort of any sort of counterpart anymore to that business cycle that obviously constantly changes, right? So I do think it's important that people maintain some kind of a core that gives them a different strengths, right? Because, so for example, in some of the toughest times that I found, that just walked up into the mountains is one of the beautiful things about Switzerland, right? Where you just look at the giants and you know that they're still going to be here in a million years, right? So that puts everything a little bit into perspective, right?
Perspective,
or
yes.
If you don't have mountains, you can look at the stars, and then that actually gives you an even bigger perspective. No, I mean, it's cloudy, and in London you don't see any stars. That was always my challenge living in London, right? But that's that's many, many billions of years that the universe, and maybe it's just tiny speckles in that, right? And I think just keeping a sort of a sense of perspective in these things, and then people have moved on. And there's all of these great founder stories, right, that went bust and then billionaires again and then whatever, right? But I think it's true for everybody, right? We all need to get through these ups and downs. What about you? How do you deal with all of these challenges in life?
In general, I think I'm someone, I like change, so I get bored very easily, and I like this environment because it requires curiosity and constant learning, which I personally like. But no, I agree. I also need to take time away or to put things into perspective. I think it's very easy to get stuck in your daily routine, but to me it's important that I think I stay grounded by also living a little bit apart, not where my work is, in an environment that has nothing to do with technology or even fast pace. So I live in Lucerne, in a tourist town, so also very small, still have contacts to friends and family that are even more outside. I think that's definitely something that keeps me grounded. And I also believe in having a good team. So I'm a key believer in really making sure that you work with people that you're kind of in a flow state. It sounds like, I don't want to sound spiritual, but I believe in you need to have good people around. And I think I invest a lot of time in finding them. Before it was more my own team, but now it's also who do I want to work for and with, because I believe that has a lot to do with the balance and whether you can keep it or not, no matter whether you go in the mountains or have your sacred spaces. And I think it's not so easy to find good people in a fast changing environment, because also they are constantly changing. And you have to offer something that they develop with you or that they want to develop. So what would you say are crucial resources that you would need in a team to actually succeed if you're in a fast growth stage? Not at the very beginning, there it's probably a bit more straightforward. You can still outsource a lot. You need more a generalist maybe. But when you really start scaling, maybe you have made a larger round. What would be the first resources you would hire, maybe from a technical perspective a little bit, and also from a personality perspective?
Yes, I think this really depends. I think that the more advanced things get, right? Obviously, the bigger the numbers get. Also, you need to have a little bit more experience, right? So I think that somebody who's never done sort of like a full year consolidation or multi group international consolidation, and then yes, you can learn that when things are still small, because. Also, the margin of error is much smaller, right? And I think later on you need to look for people, yes, who have done, for example, automation, and you have who have done basically how do I do this when it's 10 times bigger without adding 100 people outsourced in some like that do the sort of the manual. This is the mindset, right? And then I think in the team you need to look at you need to look at it as a whole, in my view. Right. So I think I wouldn't just hire one specific type, right? But actually look at how things complement. And of course, people move on and they change as well. And then so therefore that is also a little bit of a constant change. But I would always try to find for pretty much any role, right? People that are actually able to do the next step up as well, right? To have actually proven. Whether they have yet the experience or not, that is a different thing. Part of it is could be actually what you can give here is actually getting an experience, and you take a bit of a risk. But looking for people who have always pushed a bit the boundaries, right, throughout their careers, and actually have that sort of hunger to grow, right? Because that's the nature of a growth company, right? So so therefore, and I think that, yeah, I think that to your point, right, that they can deal with change, right? That is. It is sometimes tough, right? And things change, and then you think you're done, and it's 10 o'clock at night, and then you still need to do it again. Or actually, you know, maybe come is an even better idea to kind of position something in some way, right? And then, yeah, it's a lot of work, and so I try to avoid these types of things, but they do happen. I mean, when they happen, then you need the team to deliver, right? So that's and then it's a sort of a given thing. How are you thinking about team?
I think for the core tasks in within finance, like knowing the numbers, forecasting, and also supporting the investor story, fundraising, I would always have it in-house, I would say. And I would also look for people who have a good mix between they can develop into the new role, but they also have done certain part again, because I don't believe you can afford in this environment to have someone who hasn't done any of the aspects of the role. So it's a bit of a mix, like what you said. And then for the more functions that are not core, like accounting, for me, it's also always a buy or build question. Because when you have people, I want to develop them also. I want to provide a career or an opportunity to grow. And that sometimes you can't do everywhere, because you have a lot of things that you're really hands-on involved yourself also. And then sometimes also buy is a good solution, because there are people out there that have done it 100 times and that know how to navigate this fast growth environment. So I think that is also always a question I ask myself. Do I really need to have this in-house? Is it a process that I'm doing once a year? Or can I maybe outsource this? Is this really core? Or can someone else grow into it, and it's half-half in the beginning? And then I think the last but also really important part are the consultants. I think in a fast growth environment, once in a while you need a consultant for a system implementation or for a one-time thing. And there I tend to work with my personal network that I've built over the years, always the same people, to really make sure that it's delivered what is supposed to be delivered in the time that we agreed, and you don't have a lot of time of getting to know the company is one thing, but getting to know the whole team and how you work together. And I've made good experiences with that, of working with the same people, also if it's in a different environment or if they have grown or moved somewhere. But I try to use my network as much as I can. And I'm also generally interested in getting to know people in within the same environment, because you never know when you cross.
And how do you do that in an environment that you're not familiar with? Like a different country, or how do you actually then deal with that?
Good question. You start somewhere. Networks, I think, also play an important role. Or someone always knows someone in that country, and
you just need to trust that person that they stand by their own name, not to recommend you somebody that doesn't deliver, right? So this is the important bit, right? Yeah. So don't just take any recommendation because somebody knows somebody, but actually I think that's worth digging into, right?
Yeah.
In terms of like,
I agree.
Just knowing somebody, but have you actually worked with them? Have they delivered? Like, do you actually personally, would you actually vouch for them to actually deliver and do the job in time and on cost and on quality and all of the sort of the metric? I think that's maybe one thing, right? To be aware of.
And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Yeah. Also, then to say, hey, okay, now we take the cut. I mean, it's the same in business. Not every initiative, not everything you try works. And I think that is also something where I think I need to sometimes step back a little bit. Hey, is this setup really working for me? Or am I now involved in some things way too heavily because I had a resource topic or a topic with an outsourcing provider that I didn't solve because it wasn't my number one priority? And then all of a sudden the pain point becomes big enough so you solve it. So I think saying no is definitely also something that you need to be able to do in this role.
So how do we conclude? Because I think we're supposed to talk about scaling finance, and I would say we've alluded to many different aspects, and it's a challenging, ever-evolving sort of jigsaw puzzle that we're facing with. Well, what would be your conclusion of it all, right? What would be your ultimate advice to the audience here?
Not sure whether I have an ultimate advice. All I can say, it's a really interesting role, especially in a fast changing environment. And I think what is key is to actually engage with the network, with people who have done it before. And that is something that I'm constantly doing, because there are a lot of things that I've never done, don't know anything about, trying to find people who have done it before. And I think that's definitely something that brings you forward, brings the company forward. So I would be keen. What's your go-to source?
What's my go-to source?
Or is there someone in our environment that you say, hey, this is a person or a source? Could be a newsletter or anything whatsoever that you listen to.
I think it's more like a number of different contacts for a number of different problems, right? And then I think it's also, I think the one thing I was actually going to say is slightly different. I mean, I think one should get advice from a broad range of different things, and you still need to draw your own conclusion. I think one thing I wanted to reflect on is your earlier question about how do you manage personally with all of these things? And I think part of what is also very important is to take a step back, right? And I would actually say maybe one sort of advice is also for whether that's junior people or more senior people, and actually taking that step back. And then sometimes it's in the gym, or sometimes you go for a hike and so on, but at least I never really stop thinking about so either subconsciously or consciously and so on, right? But sometimes actually the best ideas really come when you're slightly removed, right? And if you're only in there, always in the analysis paralysis, you're actually not taking that step back and saying, like, does this make as a whole sense, right?
And as, yes, and I would like to add, I always ask myself the question, does it move the needle? Mm. Because it's very easy to get hooked up into something which may not add up or is not correct, especially in finance. You're also, of course, your environment is people, you want to be accurate. Yeah. This is the role. You want to be complete,
but then
I always go home and say, does this move the needle? Am I working on the right topics? And I found a way that works for me. So every Monday morning, I tell myself what are my priorities for the week. And then every day in the morning, I'm also someone that I'm engaged easily. I like to explore things. I like to have things correct. So every day in the morning, I ask myself, what am I working on today? Does it really move the needle?
Yeah,
that's good. I think that is probably one of the major
And everybody should ask themselves that question, right? Nobody should feel like, well, I'm just working on this piece of accounting, right? Yeah. I think that there is actually in all roles, right, to lesser or greater extent. But I think everybody can actually move into that direction. And part of that could be as simple as, like, I've seen people getting totally stuck on a number, right? And then they just kind of like, they don't actually see the number. Like, everybody should train themselves to take that step back, see it in the context, right? Or like those who build decks for like, get stuck on the nitty-gritty deal. But you do need to take that step back. And I think that's ultimately what makes people take the next step in their careers, is actually to take that macro perspective again. Does the whole story make sense, right? The numbers always tell a story as well, right? What is the story that we're actually seeing? What is the insights that we're generating? And that only comes from, yes, you need to do the hard work, you need to do all of the things, so that is as correct as it can be, right, as we discussed, but then, you know, in the bigger picture. And I think everybody, that especially in finance, right, you have a very privileged insight into the company works. Yeah. And then if you're really curious, right, then it's not just about this EBITDA, this or that, right? But actually, why is it there, right? Which exactly. are the drivers? Which businesses? Where's the margin drivers and so on? And actually getting curious about these things, especially in smaller organizations, maybe more easily possible than in large organizations. But that's what I would encourage people, right? Keep that curiosity, take that bigger perspective, and keep thinking about the real challenge. And I like your perspective of, like, are you moving the needle?
Data is important, but even more important is the context. The context of it, I totally agree to that. Yeah, it's, are we moving the needle? And if we're not, why not?
So hopefully we move the needle tonight.
And I hope so.
Giving people some food for thought. And always happy if people reach out. That of course. But think about your businesses, drive them forward. And I think it's exciting. Entrepreneurship is super exciting. You need all sorts of these different elements, including the CFOs, hopefully.
I agree.
The AI CFO is, of course, coming. And then we can finally just sip cocktails on the beach, right? So then we're done.
I'm not sure about that. Maybe then we're lonely, because I think someone needs to translate the numbers into the story. But yeah, we can sip more cocktails. But we do it already today, because we only work on stuff that move the needle sometimes. Yeah, thanks for listening in.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this deep dive into scaling finance as an organization and going through the different matters of the modern CFO, forecasting and aligning KPIs, managing fundraisers and capital structure, as well as finding a complementary team to build a strong backbone of the finance org that holds everything together. If you have any comments to make, feel free to send them to fabian@unicornbakery.de or comment on YouTube or Spotify. We would be happy to dive even deeper into these topics. Thanks again to our friends from SAP for Startups, who helped us set up this episode and bring together Fabienne and Remo. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the rest of your day.